many robots to go into arteries. They go into the
Yeah, I've seen actually they have a pill that is not digested. Well, it is digested because you swallow it, but it has a camera, and it's the size of a pill, and it gives back amazing footage. I guess that's an alternate way of...
Is that what that is?
I'm not sure. Okay. All right. So we're up to. This is Who's missing? Nachshon, is he on? No. Okay. Do we have 11:15? Is it the right time? Should we start?
11:20.
You have 11:20, right? Okay.
Okay.
All right. So let's continue. So we were discussing last week, last few weeks actually, the last couple of verses in Kohelet, and we were discussing 12:11 specifically last week, of how the wise men. And the sayings are like, they're like goads. The sayings of the wise are like goads. They're like nails that are firmly, they're driven nails. But they have some, they have a head to the nail. We said that's what it means, bale asufos. The nails themselves, although they're firmly planted, when you hammer a nail in, it's very hard to pull it out. But as long as it has a head to the nail, a place that you can grab it. That the commentators talked about, meaning to say that the statements of the wise are not something which are completely subterranean, you have to use that metaphor, that they're completely below the surface, that we can't access them at all. Of course, that wouldn't be, that would be futile for them to make statements and for them to be completely unintelligible or without any means by which people of lesser caliber, or even their peers, would be able to decipher what they're saying. So that's what a head on a nail is. It gives you a way to pull the nail out. So the metaphor here is that they gave you certain, in their statements, there were hints, there were clues to what they were driving at. So, but we didn't. I don't think we clarified the last part of the verse, and again, it has to make sense why it's all in one verse. It says that given by one shepherd, meaning these ideas that the rabbis are discussing are all given from one shepherd, meaning God. So, number one, I saw this morning, why they refer to God as a shepherd. So it's like we said, the last couple of verses referred to the fact that King Solomon and the wise men all spoke about two areas. Verse 10 says that Kohelet desired to find words that were desirable, that people would hear, and he wrote words that were upright, morally correct, and also words of truth. I mean, he addressed both spheres of knowledge, moral truths and intellectual truths. So moral truths would have to do with a person's behavior, whether something is good or bad. That's one area of knowledge, and that was what was given to Adam after the sin. But prior to the sin, there was no concept of shame, of nudity. That's the Torah goes out of the way to tell us that, because morality didn't exist yet. And he was functioning on the higher plane of naming the animals and seeing intellectual truths and perceiving the world and seeing God's creation and marvels. And that's all within the sphere of true and false. So, this verse 11 continues on that, where it talks about that the wise men had given goads, that their words were like goads, and things that steer an animal, and also like statements of truths. And all the things that they said had the ability to be deciphered. They gave clues, like the head of a nail, a place to pull out the truth they were talking about. But the reason why these ideas are, you could say, number one, they're morality, they deal with morality. So it refers to God as being a roeh, meaning the God who shepherds a person, who drives, just like an animal driver, and is working with the animals, meaning it's just a purely instinctual being. So God also is giving us lessons that address the instinctual part of man. But I think there's more, there's a subtle idea, but it fits in with the verse too, and it's also, I think, more essential. And that is that you can't talk about the wise man and the great sayings and how the wisdom without telling you that it comes, that it emanates from God. I mean, that's ultimately why there's tremendous wisdom here, because where it emanates from. So that's why it's put together in this one verse. It talks about the words of the wise. Yes, they spoke with great depth and they gave you clues, but the reason why these ideas have to be worked on, and it's not a simple thing, it's not a simple matter to unravel the words of an intelligent person, is because ultimately intelligence all comes from God. And that's really the ultimate explanation why ideas require patience and diligence. Right, so I don't think we hit on that point last week. But it's nice the way it works in, because it's part of the very verse. It's explaining why the words of the wise are, they're like driven nails. Because ultimately, the wisdom is from the one shepherd, meaning God. Yes? Right, that's Rashi's view. There's another view that refers to, I believe, that refers to the one shepherd being God.
Right. There's another comment made in my Judaica press, but they don't give a source. It says, on the same verse, the one shepherd, from the shepherd of Israel in his Torah, for included in his words are their words. And just know that in Ecclesiastes Rabbah, both Moses and God are referred to as a shepherd. What I was drawn to, particularly in Rashi's, is his saying that all their words are the words of the living God. He said them, and one shepherd gave them, that is, Moses from God. So that seems to suggest that Rashi is making a distinction between these words and the words that Moses gave.
Let's see. Rashi is called the Ram Devar Elokim. All their words, are the words of the living God. He said them, and one shepherd gave them, referring to Moses from the mouth of God. All right, so what is he... What specifically are you asking on that?
Well, when we talk... my translation of 11 reads the words of the wise. But like goads, so forth, given from one shepherd. So the question is, what is the... what is he referring to when he says the words of the wise? Is he referring to any good idea? Is he referring to just the words of the written Torah? Is he referring to all of Nach, including what we're reading? And I'm getting from Rashi that he seems to be referring to the written Torah, because that's what God gave through Moses.
I don't see that from Rashi, because Rashi is saying that all of their words, meaning the wise men, are the words of the living God, which you could say meaning that they're trying to elucidate God's Torah. But the words of the wise are their own. I don't see why we have to limit that to the Torah. I mean, it says afterwards that God said them, and then one shepherd gave them, meaning Moses, from the mouth of the Mighty One, meaning God. But our verse is not talking about Moses or God. It's saying the words of the wise men, plural. So it can't be either Moses or God. It says the words of the wise in plural. That would seem to indicate that whatever the people recognize as wise say, they're trying to elucidate what Moses gave from God.
Yeah, I think we're, and maybe I'm reading too much into Rashi, if I slightly reword Rashi just to fill in the pronouns, read to me, all their words are the words of the living God. He said the words of the living God, or he said their words, and one shepherd gave the words, that is Moses from God. So I have kind of an A equals B equals C, and C is now defined to be the words that Moses was given by God, and therefore that takes me back to, well, that must equal A, what he started talking about at the beginning of his commentary. Am I making any sense?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, but I wouldn't say that the words of the wise, they spoke, of their own, they spoke like we're speaking, without restriction of, we could talk about the idea of color. And even that, if we, analyze it correctly, that's going back to wisdom that God gave, ultimately. Going back to Moses, going back to God. So I'm suggesting that when it says the words of the wise, meaning it's talking about, I don't know if we're disagreeing, by the way, just that their words of the wise men are rooted in elaborating ultimately Torah that came from Moses from God's mouth.
Oh, I see. Okay. I got you. Yeah,
I mean, he's saying this at the end also, at the end of his book, King Solomon. He wants us to have the concept of appreciating wisdom in our life. He desired to do what it says in verse 10, and then he refers to the wise men themselves. He even goes on in the next verse, and he says, more than these, in verse 12, more than these are those, my son, be careful, comma. So it's a funny way how to read this. The verse you can just read literally. It just says, more than those, my son, be careful, or be guard, or guard them. There's different commentaries on this, and I think they all make sense. But he says, meaning more than, according to one view, at least Sforno, more than what the rabbis have already said, more than what we've already have, be careful to guard everything, because I could only tell you in my 12 chapters of Kohelis only so much knowledge. So King Solomon is saying at the very end of the book, now be careful to guard everything that the rabbis tell you. Why? Why is he saying this? Because making many books, he says, he goes on in verse 12, there's no end to it. And it's a weariness, it's a great weariness, and wears down the flesh. And to compare your books and to make sure that they all match. So this is, prior to printing presses. Everything was, they wrote a manuscript and then they wrote another one as a copy because they wanted to publicize truths. But the way they would have to do it is to compare one to the original. And that's called the process of lahag, or higia in Hebrew. But what he's saying over here, according to one explanation, since not everything can be written down, because to make many books is there's no end. That's why he says, just continually and listen. That's what he says in the beginning of the verse. More than these, my son, be careful to guard what the rabbis tell you. Okay, I'll read you Sforno. I think he's the one that said this. He says, more than these, more than those that the wise men have stated. And so then he goes back. So the way the commentators work is they quote a few words from the verse, and then they give the commentary. Then they, you know, quote a few more and give more. So the first thing he quotes is more than these, meaning more than those words of the rabbis that they already stated. Then he goes back to the verse and he says, "My son, you should be careful. What should be careful about?" So Sforno comments, "To understand and to teach." Then he goes back to the verse and he says, he quotes the words, "Making many books, there's no end." And as Sforno says, now what does King Solomon mean, making many books, there's no end? What is that doing in this verse? So he says, the explanation is that the roeh, meaning the shepherd, has not explained all of his words. Meaning God didn't elaborate. He gave very, he spoke tersely, very, sometimes cryptically, but there's so much concentrated in just a few words. And he hasn't really elaborated. God didn't elaborate on every single one of his verses. So therefore, you really need all these books, but there's no end to them. And there will be no end to trying to explain what God says. So King Solomon is saying at the end of his work that you can't, you never have an end if you want to keep on writing explanations to what, you know, the wisdom of God that he encapsulated in a few words. So that's why he's saying that since you can't keep writing, there'll never be an end to it. Therefore, that's why, more than what the rabbi said here, you should keep in mind to be on guard, to understand that you'll have to look into it more. There's more to unravel. And he kind of Sforno says further, and to constantly compare the works and your writings, it'll wear you out, it wears away the flesh. And he says that meaning the physical powers that a person has, they wane. There's only so much. And it's not sufficient, and there's not sufficient time for a person during his life to explore everything. So he's telling you that this is not an end, this is not, we haven't, you know, thoroughly gone through everything that we can. It's just an endless process. So it's that's what he means, I believe, in verse 12.
Rabbi, how do you translate verse 12?
More than these words that the rabbi has already said, my son, you should be careful to guard them. Why? Because making many books, there's no end. So it's impossible for the rabbis to have elaborated on everything. There's just no end to God's wisdom. All right? And it also wearies the flesh. It's just physically impossible to expound on everything which God, all the truths that exist. So because of that, he's giving you a warning in the beginning of the verse and saying, more than the words that we've discussed here, you should listen to all the words of the rabbis. I mean, they're going to continually talk throughout the generations. So be on guard to listen to them. These are wise men. So King Solomon is saying, I can't cover everything in one book. And not one book can hold everything either. That's how Sforno understands that. And Rashi says similarly, I believe. He says that, he says, my son, be careful to guard the words of the wise men. And if you'll ask, if there's a need to listen to the words, why did they write them? So Rashi says, it wasn't sufficient. I guess they didn't have the sufficient ability. Because if they came to try to write everything, that wouldn't be, they wouldn't be able to cover everything. More than these words, meaning more than what they already spoke about. Don't just think this is the end of the matter and only what I wrote in these verses you should be careful about, but whatever they continue to speak about, you should be on guard to listen and to be careful to follow them.
Okay, then do we have a difference in I guess meaning appears in verse 11.
Okay.
Okay. And so it seems like a really weird juxtaposition to say, you know, the words of the wise are good stuff. And more than those, my son, beware. But, well, beware of what? And then, making many crooks has no end, and studying much is a weariness of flesh. But if you're involved in the learning of the words of the wise, and you know, other words that they'll say, and so forth, it seems like that's the equivalent of reading many books and of studying. And so I don't understand why he's saying beware, because that seems like a watch out, there's a trap here. And I'm not clearly seeing what the trap is.
Well, the word is zahir. That means to be careful. Not to be afraid or frightened. It means to be careful, to pay, you know, to give heed. So you can basically read the verse that following what he said previously, that the rabbi has spoken great wisdom and there's great depth to what they're saying. But since writing many books, is you just can't expound on everything. And it's not going to all be covered, and it wearies the flesh. So you can't cover everything in print, so therefore, just be careful to really, you know, follow what they're saying verbally, because that's going to continue through your life. You can't have a complete set of books that covers everything that God's ever going to speak about. Man is finite, and what he can do is finite. So he's saying that even though we wrote this book and now we're coming to the end, but since man cannot cover everything in print, so constantly listen to what the rabbis say verbally as you attend their classes and as you learn from them on a daily basis. There'll be more, and that you should give equal you know, care about that what they're saying is teaching you about truths.
It seems like he's contradicting them, because it seems like he's saying, okay, but more than the words of the wise, be careful, because not everything can be written down, and to study it all is going to wear you out.
It's going to wear out, meaning the wise men can't write down everything. So more than what they've written, you're going to have the opportunity to learn verbally. Meaning a person might, what King Solomon is doing here, he's speaking to the tendency in man that only what's in print is what I got to concern myself with. Because otherwise, if there's some importance to it, like Rashi said, why didn't they write it down? That's what Rashi exactly is saying. He said, Rashi says, if you'll ask, if there's a need to listen to more of the words, so why didn't they write them too? So Rashi's saying, you can't write everything. It's like a person may, you know, get overwhelmed by how much there is to do in mitzvahs, and so many laws, and so many halachas and all. So a person might, you know, like it says, the Jews at Mount Sinai, so they ran away from the mountain like a child runs away from school. That's what the rabbi said. I mean, there was such a tremendous shift in the previous freedom that they had, unbridled by a Torah system, and now one fell swoop to being given a whole bunch of new laws. Other places it says that they were crying, that they couldn't have sexual relations with members of their family anymore, which was something they used to do. There was no prohibition on that. Torah came and it prohibited that. It says they were crying by the household. So Rashi says, I believe, they were crying about the household. So a person has, you know, that's in a human tendency. People have not been redesigned since Sinai. I mean, we're all the same. So if the rabbis are telling us that the Jews had that emotion back then, certainly weaker people today, that they're not even on the level of those Jews. They had some level of prophecy at the seashore, and they sang the Oz Yashir song when they saw the Egyptians washed up on the shore. So that there was a, and the rabbis say that the Jews of the generation of the desert were a wise people. They were a Dor Dea, an intelligent generation. Now, keeping all that in mind, when you see nonetheless that they fled from Sinai, like a child flees from school. A child leaves school because he's got enough, you know, enough learning. I want to go out and play. I want to have unbridled activity. So perhaps King Solomon is touching on that over here, that don't think that this is the end. Now you're done learning. And this is all that you have to follow. Continually listen to what the rabbis have to say, because they can't cover everything in print. Well, I mean, King Solomon, but Moses had the Torah. He wrote down 13 copies at the end of his life.
Yeah, I guess maybe I'm asking this in a more general term. I mean, books are so prolific now, they're everywhere, but at the time of King Solomon, I'm assuming that wasn't true and there wasn't nearly as much written by rabbis.
I mean, he had his father, King David, who wrote 150 chapters of Psalms, and so and whatever else was written, you know, with the prophets that they handed down that didn't become part of the writings, but I'm sure there must have been many, many ideas that they wrote and they shared. You know, they recognized the importance of sharing their ideas. But I think, you know, the basic sense of the verse that we have. No, not studying. That's not the right word. Lihag means to compare, to make copies, and to compare to make sure that both copies are exact duplicates. It doesn't say studying is wearing the flesh, just the opposite.
So, according to that translation, he's really talking about the physical act of copying over books.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, the Hebrew word is really important.
Rabbi?
Yes?
One of our commentaries here, and it looks like this is from Rashi, seems to comment on this saying that this has to do with memorizing large amounts more than the heart can grasp. That is weariness to man. But let one not say that I cannot complete the work, why should I begin?
Right, yeah, I'll read that. Rashi, I see that one right here. He says, if you come to give your heart to be, to either translate bundles, meaning to go through a lot of material, more than what your heart really has the ability to do, that will wear you out. So a person has to know his abilities. And he won't be able to do it. But he shouldn't also say that since I can't complete it, so why should I even start? That's something we should have rabbis saying, Pirkei Avos. You see, again, there's an emotion over there, an emotion of accomplishment. And that's what Rashi is speaking against. He says, don't think that your toil in study is because you're trying to cover ground. So therefore, since you can't do everything, you shouldn't start. That's not the goal. The goal is not to cover everything. It's not a race.
But Rabbi, if it's not study and it's comparison, how does that apply? I mean, Rashi just doesn't seem to understand it as the comparison and the copying.
Well, it could be either way with Rashi. I mean, because he is talking about translation. That's the word he uses, right? If a person comes to give his heart to translate bundles? Is that what you have?
They say here memorize large amounts.
Here the word is girsa. Girsa means like a translation or a text. But I mean, it could apply to that too. But the word in the verse you can't change, and that is, you know, the literal translation. And, you know, Rashi can add on more to it, but the literal translation is to, you know, to be making copies. And that makes sense with the verse, because he's saying that to make many books, there's no end. So now, while he's talking about making many books, because then he talks about the process of making many books requires constant comparing. And the reason why it wears you out is because there you're just repeating something over and over again is what wears a person out. But learning new concepts, and in the next hour you uncover a new concept, and the next hour a new concept, that's not going to wear you out. You may just get tired because, you know, at the end of the day you need to sleep. But what wears out a person is repetition, where there's no novelty, there's nothing new, he's not going further. So that's why it makes sense that that's what's talking about wearing out. And memorization also has that to it, if you want to go that way, because memorization is when you repeat something over numerous times. So, and that's something which they did do. They wanted to commit things to memory. And that was the, you know, the oral law was not allowed to be written down until a certain point. But I think the overall sense is that the person has to realize that there's much more than what we covered here in this book. So again, Rashi could be adding on top of what just copying, and he wants to take it further, that's fine. But we can't replace the text with the commentary. Commentary can only come to add, to elaborate. Like the rabbis say, a verse cannot be explained which is contrary to its plain meaning. That's why those words are there. That's why you have to be so true to the words. And those really are the heads of the nails. But why is this word used? Why did it call God a shepherd in the previous verse? That's the head of the nail that you can pull out an idea from. You see these, you know, novelties, these inconsistencies, these subtle nuances. Say reading what?
Foolish ideas.
Foolish ideas? Where do you see that in the verse?
Well, with the being careful, I'm saying, if I'm reading this, at least in the English translation, it looks like more than the words of the wise, beware is how it's translated here, to be careful. I would not take that as guard. In fact, because the first is and more than they, it seems like it's saying be careful when you're reading more than the words of the wise. Because there are many bad ideas out there, and there are going to be many books, and studying much is the weariness of the flesh, which means you only have so much time and so much energy to devote to study. So therefore, study the words of the wise. And be careful about going beyond that, because it's a waste of your time and energy, and ultimately unhelpful. That's how I would understand verse 12, just from the English translation.
Yeah, I understand. I mean, you know, there's a lot of ways it could be read, and I think that's really what the benefit of having, you know, people like, you know, Rashi and Ibn Ezra and Sforno helping us to guide us towards what the sense is and keeping us on track, because you're right. I mean, and I'm sure if we get 55 other people, you know, they can come up with 55 more nuances in the verse too. But that's why, number one, you know, the commentaries are very important. And, you know, I was looking it over also. I misread it myself too. I looked at it and I said, more than this, beware, my son, of making many books. If you just keep on reading it and you don't look at the punctuation, the Hebrew punctuation tells you when there's a pause. So the pause comes after the word, be careful. So that means one thought is more than these words. And what does it mean? Because it's just a pronoun, more than these. What are these that we're talking about? These people, these statements, or these words that I'm about to write? So that's why it's necessary. There can be a lot of leeway without the guidance. And I think maybe that's why they wrote the commentaries. They saw, especially a work like this, it could be cryptic. But the punctuation is another tool that we have to know when to pause. So therefore, I can't say the way I originally thought, that more than these, my son, beware of making many books. That's no. You have to pause. So it has to be more than these, my son, beware. Oh, okay, so and now I can understand, and based on the commentary too, beware of what we just said about listening to the rabbis. Then he continues. And he says, making many books, there's no end to it. That's a new thought. Let's not be careful or beware of making many books. So the punctuation is necessary, and again, without looking at Ibn Ezra's Forna, I wouldn't have seen what I believe to be is one of the main ideas of the verse. But reading without the commentaries, we could really, go off track. Does that clarify for you?
Not exactly, Rabbi. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Don't feel bad, Jim. Me too. I'm not really clear on it, Rabbi.
Okay.
The punctuation, it would help you to understand it better, but I'm not clear on that.
Right. Well, the truth is also, they're not speaking the way we speak. So that's another problem.
Right.
But if we do look at the commentators, I believe that they show sense to it. And they're actually, in harmony, Sforno and Rashi.
Would you mind making a comment on it one more time to just explain that last...
Yeah, he's saying, it's pretty much one long thought that... Based on what he said earlier in the previous verse, that the words of the wise, they're like driven nails, but there are heads to the nails. I mean, there is a way to pull out the ideas. So why do you have to pull out an idea? Because it's not something simple. It takes time to unravel. But now, after he talked about that, and he's talking about the statements of what the wise men, discussed, so now he's trying to tell us, but be careful that you should listen to even more than, because they didn't write everything down. You can't write everything down. It's just that there's no end. There's no end to the books that you can write. So therefore, don't assume that only what's written is all you have to follow. That's what he says in the beginning. More than these words. Be careful to follow them. Because you can't, there's no end to writing books. And to constantly make copies, it wears a person out. He explains why there's no end to the subject matter. Plus, there's only certain human, capabilities a person has that he could get worn out. So because of those two considerations, continually listen to what the wise say more than what was written here in this book, Alice.
Okay, right. Okay, now I got it. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Rabbi?
Yes?
Do any of the other commentators take a different view than Rashi and Sforno?
Yeah, let's take a look. I think Ibn Ezra has a different view. He says, funny, as I originally read, he says, and more than this, be careful from making books. Meaning that's something which can weary you out. And, it says about King Solomon that he wrote 3,000 metaphors. So that's the way Ibn Ezra explains it. It's a warning to try, not to try to make too many books. Yeah.
Rabbi?
Yes.
If we're not supposed to follow, or not to make so many books, if the rabbis are not supposed to make so many books, then there is, which way are we supposed to get the information?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't fully understand Ibn Ezra.
Well, I'm not clear on that at all. And hopefully if we read the books, we learn from that. And, you know, and I hate to say this outwardly, but there are rabbis today that we could listen to, but that doesn't mean they're right. There's a lot of rabbis that have their own notions, and they interject that, and they're not really teaching the true Torah.
Right, it's true.
We're not smart, but we're just average people. We're not rabbis. So how do we know what's truth and what's not truth? We take a rabbi's words and say, oh, it's not the words of God. But it's not. A lot of it is their own interpretation. A lot of it is their own ego. And I hate to put it that way. I don't mean to insult anybody. I'm just saying people are people.
Okay, but it's a different point, though.
Yeah.
What he's saying over here, according to Ben Ezra, is just, he says, literally, I'll just translate it, and more, be careful from making books. Just like it says, guard yourselves from going up to the mountain. That was the warning by Sinai. And he says, and what does he mean from making books? He means acquiring, or maybe even writing, because there's no end to them. So maybe he's, I mean, the one thing you can say off the top is that when you're writing, so you're not involved in learning, necessarily. So perhaps what he's saying is that be careful, because maybe he, now that he knows, after writing so much, that can take away from your pursuit of covering new ground, of seeing new ideas. So maybe, I'm not sure exactly, because Ibn Ezra doesn't really disclose what the problem is. Right, so it's not, he doesn't give enough information, at least for me, to know what he's what his warning is. He says one possibility is maybe from buying too many books. So maybe there it refers to, why would a person buy a lot of books? A person, sometimes he buys a lot, he feels that automatically, oh, I have such a big library, that's a credit to his intellect, even without breaking the spine. That's one type of a notion, which I can see him referring to. But he's talking about the emotion, and also maybe writing a lot, the person that thinks if he writes a lot, so then there's, like a person who's a big playwright, or a person who's authored many, many books, so there's the ego can get involved over there. But in both cases, whether it's acquisition or whether it's writing, it seems to be pointing to that you're looking at quantity as opposed to the quality of learning. And maybe that's what Ibn Ezra is pointing to. Yeah, but both of the ideas are true, Ibn Ezra and Sforno and Rashi.
Yeah, both, that's right. The only plus about all of this is that if we do acquire books, have to just break the spine, you know, read them. That doesn't do any good just sitting on the shelf. But it's very important to read the information that was given from so many centuries, so many years ago, from the prophets and the real rabbis, before any of it. I keep thinking of the word ego. I keep thinking of that because I find that nowadays there's a lot of that.
Right, but look at the word that he says that's important in this verse. He says the word in excess. However you translate it, whether it's making many books or acquiring many books or writing many, meaning the excessive is what King Solomon is warning against. Meaning it has to be, people have to write. It's important to transmit. That's the biggest mitzvah in the Torah, is to learn and to teach.
Okay.
But in excess is what he's warning about. I mean, there's something about excess, harbe, if you look at the word in the verse. So he says, doing it in excess is what he's admonishing.
Okay.
according to the Ibn Ezra. According to Rashi and Sforno, making many books, which is really what he'd need to talk all about what God said, that's impossible. There's no end. There's no end to it. So those seem to be the two tracks that the rabbis are going on in explaining this verse. But the message is that you have to, you know, you have to have your ears open, and don't be like the Jews that ran away from Sinai, like a child runs away from school. Work on that attitude. A person could very easily, and I'm sure many, many people have this problem, where it becomes a burden to them. It's too much. That's why people do this pick and choose thing in Judaism. So they're trying to make Judaism comply with the emotional, you know, frame set that they have now. They're not trying to change themselves to perfect themselves. They're trying to change Judaism to comply with their emotional needs for comfort and relaxation. A lot of people want that. They just want to relax. They want to take it easy. They're always trying to just, you know, minimize the effort, when this lifestyle requires just the opposite. From the time you wake up in the morning, the rabbis say, a person should rise in the morning like a lion for the service of his creator. But like Rabbi Chait said, service of the creator, I mean, when you talk ourselves about it being a servant to God, we're really a servant to ourselves. We're doing it for ourselves. There's nothing we can do for God. The person has the wrong idea if he's trying to release himself from the quote-unquote the burden. If he looks at it properly and he sees the benefit, so he embraces it, and he wants to plow through and learn more and to see more. But here, King Solomon is talking to the emotion of the person, where they may be looking for that out. They're looking for the release. We've covered the whole book here now. Great, we're done. No, don't think that. So he talks at the end of his book, he talks to that emotion where a person may be looking, okay, you know, that's it. That's all I really have to, you know, to tend to. All right, number of ideas in this verse. And again, you know, you need the guidance of the rabbis, the commentators, to see where is it going. And the verses are written in a certain way. And they're not the way we normally talk. So it's different. We're not used to it. Really, this verse here is the opposite of the way. A person would say, since it's impossible to write everything down and it wears your flesh, so then... afterwards, then say in the verse, the beginning. So more than these words, you should listen to the rabbis. Because since it's impossible to write everything down, you're not going to have everything in books. You'll have to listen with your ears too. So then more than what's written, you should listen to. But here it's reverse. And a lot of the verses are like that. But it takes time to, you know, to acclimate yourself to you know, how they word it. All right. Pursuit of truth. It has to be, you know, you're pursuing the truth. You have to be able to say you don't know or I'm wrong, and to really be honest to the words. Like, you know, Rabbi Chait always say, let the words speak to you. That's really what has to be the path, to be true to the words. And then you'll, you know.
What you said before, such a beautiful way of thinking of it, the head of the nail that you can actually pull out a thought.
Yeah, that is, that's not me. That's first of all, it's King Solomon's very words, but who said that? One second.
I think it was King Solomon.
Yeah, that's, yeah, one second. Yes, Swarno. He said the heads and nails is something that you could pull out with the pliers or some other tool. Yeah. Or some other tool.
Oh.
Okay?
Well, okay. Thank you.
Okay, so I guess we'll wrap it up here. And we'll pick up Sunday with 12:13. All right, unless there's any other questions.
Think we're good here.
Yeah.
All right. All right, so have a good week, everybody. And we'll pick up next Sunday, right? 12:13, we'll start next week.
Thank you very much. Okay.
Okay.
Be well.
Have a good week, everybody.
You too.
Thank you. Be well.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.